gonna do without our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Masks Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. Mask mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Our number again is 718-758-0400. All calls are kept strictly confidential. Anyone that wants to join a parent support group, please call us to register. We have many different groups going on and still by Zoom or in person. We have Monday night, Dr. Debbie Ackerman, by Zoom. Tuesday night, Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld by Zoom. Wednesday night, Rabbi Dr. Ben Sion Twersky by Zoom. We have on Sundays for blended families, second marriages, bringing up each other's children by Zoom with Yeshaya Krause. We have in-person groups, Crown Heights, Dr. Miriam Gross, in Flatbush once a month, Dr. Trish Atia, and in the Five Towns, Cheryl Friedman. In addition, we have specific Zoom groups for single dads and alienation in families with single dads, and a single moms group in person with Harriet Cabelli in the Five Towns. So please call us to register. There is no charge for these groups. 718-758-0400. So tonight, I've really been looking forward to doing this interview for a very long time. The book has been sitting on my desk, read it, it's wonderful, and that is Kosher ADHD, Surviving and Thriving in the Torah Observant World by Dr. Simcha Chestner and Dr. Sarah Markowitz. So I'd like to welcome you on. Dr. Chestner, it's so wonderful to have you on all the way from Eretz Yisrael. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, and we're all very well here, thank God. And I'm also really excited to be on this podcast because I think that the work that MASK does in general is so important, particularly for the Torah observant Jewish community, that there's unfortunately so much stigmatization of mental illness. And it's so, I'm a clinical psychologist, by the way, by profession. And, you know, I just see it all the time that unfortunately, you know, we're supposed to be the light unto the nations. But when it comes to mental illness, unfortunately, we're still in so many ways living in the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages. And to see what the work that the type of work that MASK does and the scope of the work that MASK does, it's just really inspiring, because it's really the future and really the topic that I'm particularly involved with, which is ADHD. It's really, in a sense, I view it as a microcosm of the entire scope of the Jewish population. So I'm happy for being invited to speak here, and I thank you, and I just hope that your work should be blessed. And you know, at this time of the year, Rosh Hashanah, I know people might think about giving to places. I am so certain that mask is such an important tzedakah for people to be able to give to, and you know, unfortunately needed, but kind of often overlooked, because people are unnecessarily and unfortunately ashamed to identify because of a stigma that's associated.
Well, thank you. And yes, we have been working for 27 years to, you know, work towards stigma-free. And it is so wonderful that we can have this book on kosher ADHD, because being ADHD, so many of our clients that are struggling with ADHD are confused. Parents don't know how to handle when they get the call from, you know, school. You have to get your kid evaluated. Third grade, fourth grade, they're starting to learn Gemara. They can't sit in the chair, whatever. So let's start off with, did you have a personal experience? Do you want to share about ADHD that led you to write the book?
Yeah, well, when I was growing up in Brooklyn in the 60s, so, you know, nobody, there wasn't even the term ADHD, was not even around back then. And, you know, they were just bad kids. And I was kind of one of those kids who was sort of, I was a behavioral problem from the third grade onward. And I was lucky. I was really fortunate. I was able to get good grades on tests. So I could cram the night before, and I did well on my tests. So, you know, people were satisfied well enough with me. But I mean, the sense of never being able to keep my books neat and never being able to, you know, losing more things than the average person and not being able to tolerate those, the relative boredom of the classroom, it was just horrible for me. And I always felt there was something wrong with me. And to be quite honest, until I was in graduate school studying psychology, and I went to my first seminar by Dr. Russell Barkley, where he spoke about this thing, this new thing, or this new way of looking at things called attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, I said, you know, even though I'm not really hyperactive by any means, boy, that sure sounds like me. And I think that from that moment onward, you know, almost four decades ago, I've really been very involved with developing ADHD on the professional level. You know, I moved to Israel with my family about 35 years ago. And for the past, and since I've been here, I've established a series of schools in Israel. I work very closely with the Israel Ministry of Education, and we're really trying to normalize and destigmatize this population of ADHD. And I really think it all stems from the fact that I naturally identify with these kids because in many ways, I think I really was one of them. You know, my wife will tell you today as an adult, and, you know, thank God I've been married for 43 years now. My wife will tell you that, you know, I still am. And, you know, I certainly have many of the characteristics of an ADHD person. So yeah, my personal life definitely led into what I'm doing, and it led into the decision to write the book Kosher ADHD, because I feel that we are really in the Torah community. There are a whole different series of challenges that people with ADHD experience, whether it's needing to get to daven, to go to shul on time, whether it's learning Gemara is considered a very, very high level that every boy or man should do, with women who are supposed to maintain, you know, the superwoman role of maintaining the home and doing everything else. And in today's days, you know, usually working as well full time. You know, a person with ADHD, it creates a nightmarish scenario. Observing Shabbos is like a torture chamber for some people with ADHD. And unless parents can really understand what ADHD is and come to view it with compassion and without judgment, well, you know, the kids are really going to suffer.
Yes. Early in the book, it says how the book is organized. And I think it's really important that you share with my listeners how it's organized so that they'll understand how it could be helpful for them to buy the book and read it, because you make it very, you break it down very, very well.
Yeah, we tried to do it very practically, and the most practical way that both Dr. Markowitz, who's also a clinical psychologist, and myself, she lives actually in New Jersey. I live in Male Adumim on the other side of the ocean. I've been working here for the past almost four decades. She's been working in the States. And we thought we ought to break down the book according to a typical day in the life of a person with ADHD. From waking up in the morning and the simple thing of saying Mode Ani, which every little kid, we teach if you grow up in an Orthodox family, in a Torah observant family, everybody knows to say Mode Ani. That unto itself is challenging for ADHD kids, to doing the Tilas Yadayim, that if kids wash their hands in the morning, you know, things that if you don't have ADHD, you'll be so not mindful that this thing can be complicated and complex, and to remember it, to sitting at the Shabbos table, to learning anything, to sitting down to learn, all of to davening, going to shul. I'm going out of order now, but you know, the book goes in the order of a day, and it just shows the multiple times that a child can get so overwhelmed and frustrated, and the adults around him, whether they're parents or teachers, can get angry and frustrated. And like most things connected with mental illness, or any type of illness for that matter, or any type of challenge, physical or cognitive challenge, anger and frustration is really, on one hand, it's natural that we can understand why people feel it, but it's so counterproductive. And I think one of the main goals, maybe the main goal of this book, is for people to start becoming sensitive to that when the child, I'm from a frum home, with ADHD is not behaving in the way they expect the frum boy to behave or the frum girl to behave. You know, it's so easy to jump to the conclusion that the child is misbehaving because he wants to misbehave and he has it under his control. And yet, after working with literally thousands of kids with ADHD, with their families and being with them in their school environment and trying to create a school environment that is more attuned to their needs, I really know without a doubt now that, you know, it's basically such a poor fit school, many of our Shabbos tables, to it's poor fit between the child's temperament and our expectations. And, you know, with Ritalin and different medications, without Ritalin, it really is a challenge for an ADHD person to make themselves, allow themselves to flow with the environment. And what's really easy for the other kid is really challenging for this child. And unless I'm able to understand that and realize it and be willing to do something productive with it, the child is just going to go from bad to worse. So, you know, that's really what we're trying to to help with this book is that what can a parent do to look at a child, to understand the child, and then to set up a chance of success, a much greater chance of success? Because right now we're losing 80% in Israel. There's research on it that it shows approximately 80% of children who are diagnosed with ADHD and who are born into in Israel either Dati or Haredi families, by the time the kids are adolescents, teenagers, they are totally disconnected from the Torah world. They have nothing to do with anything from the Torah, from Torah life, whether it's learning or shul, because they've been so hit over the head and so criticized and made to feel so damaged by the Torah world. So that's really what we're trying to make a change, really make a revolution, have people understand that just like maybe, you know, years ago, if a child would not read well, so the assumption was he's lazy or stupid or not motivated. And now we know that there's dyslexia, which is primarily a genetically transmitted problem in how the brain processes things. And many of our behavioral and mental issues are also just like this. They are not connected to one's volition, to a child making a choice. They're connected to things truly being difficult. And it's really sad when you yourself know that something is difficult, and even the people closest to you, your mother and your father, don't get it, you know. And so this concept of empathy and compassion, mindfulness, is very, very important before anything can be done with ADHD. I've never seen, for example, tough love work with ADHD alone.
Well, thank you for that. I'd like to address consequences when it comes to kids with ADHD, because like you said, you haven't seen tough love work. So you have parents who have kids that are very young and are bouncing off the walls, challenges going to sleep or in school or with authority. And there are reward charts that you recommend. I'd like you to elaborate, please, on that.
Yeah, it's one of the central points. You know, let's use the typical consequence that for years, for decades, was always recommended with ADHD was time out. And I remember when I was learning it first in the 80s, you know, even if the child would get out of the timeout chair, so then the proper parent guidance books would say what a parent should do, which should give the kid a patch on his rear end, right, and put him back. Now psychologists aren't allowed to say that anymore, and parents aren't allowed to hit their children anymore. It's illegal, probably for the best, but okay, be that as it may. Research, and this is new research that's coming out on ADHD, shows that there is a tremendous negative side effect connected to when we generally think about punishment or general consequences. And that side effect is that they're devastating to the child's self-esteem. Kids with ADHD seem to be particularly sensitive, although they may not show it on the outside, but on the inside, they're incredibly sensitive to feelings of being rejected by parents. The basic idea when a child is placed in timeout is that the parent is withdrawing the attention from him. And when that's done, that is devastating for the ADHD child, right? The child who, by definition, has problems with their own attention, desperately need our positive attention. This doesn't mean that we're supposed to be permissive with them. Quite the contrary. Our rules have to be very clear. Our expectations have to be very clear. But we want to expend more of our energy on the, I'll call it the loading side, the upfront side, which is really looking at, okay, what's happening around me? You know, what can I do so that if I give my child a command, there's going to be a high probability that my ADHD child is going to comply. when we shape the environment and we're shaping it more than trying to get the child to learn based on the punishment that comes after, because that may work for the average child, but it's treacherous for the ADHD child because the child is already having so many failure experiences and is so struggling that it is critically important to try to set up an expectation that is based on shaping the environment so that the child is probably going to succeed, and then to give a lot of positive reinforcement when the child does succeed. And something like time out needs to be reframed for an ADHD child. Something can be turned into the thinking corner or the relaxation corner, you know, a place where the child can really regroup himself and, get himself back under control, because him being out of control, again, punishment doesn't help the next time. That's what we're seeing with them. It doesn't help the next time, because that's exactly what their deficit is connecting the here and now with future consequences. So we really try to really create a here and now on all levels, whether it's taking this child to davening in the morning, whether it's having him, what he does in the classroom, working with the teacher to be proactive and to create an environment where the consequences are fast, where the here and now is more blatantly, it's in your face more. And that's the way an ADHD person can survive. You know, kids in Israel, when they're 18 or 19, they go into the army. And basic training is really it's an environment which is excellent for the overwhelming majority of ADHD people. People with ADHD tend to do really good in basic training, because the concept of basic training is that consequences are quick. You learn things immediately. The rewards and punishments are immediate, and there's a lot of correction, and that's good for them. They need to have the rules very, very clear. And when you speak to a child about something that's going to happen in 2 weeks or 2 months, or depending on the child, sometimes even the same day, it's doesn't register, because their time consciousness is not there.
So, doctor, what about executive function? We know ADHD is a disability of self-control. And it's not simply a failure to pay attention.
Yes. Yeah, I see. You know, today we understand that for many of the kids with ADHD and the adults, and, you know, maybe all, executive function, what's referred to as executive functioning tasks. Executive functioning tasks, what it really means are things that the average person brain does it in the normative brain does it without even being aware that you're doing it. For example, I remembered that I was supposed to be on my computer at this time so that we could do this podcast. We could have this discussion. And I knew that I remembered, you know, even though I'm doing different things in the middle of the day, it popped in my head. I knew that at a certain hour, I had to be right here to be here. Now, how did I remember that? I remembered that because my brain does something naturally that we call working memory. It's able to hang on to things and kind of bring them out. You know, I can access them at the time that it's necessary. So, you know, kids with ADHD are deficient, and adults, it's hard for them working memory. It means, like, teacher says, I'm giving you homework, and the child writes down the homework and puts it in their backpack, and then comes home from school and never takes out the backpack, because totally forgets, or it doesn't pop into the child's mind that they have homework to do. You know, while the average child knows, oh, I got this lousy homework I have to do, and I'm going to have to stop playing, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, so the child, average child is aware of it. The child with ADHD, if he's aware of it at all, is in the dimmest way. And that is what executive functioning is. You know, executive functioning just works. My brain forces me. Some people who are anxious, they'll be doing that too much because they're worrying about a million things that are never going to happen or that they don't have to do, right? But the ADHD person, in a sense, can't keep things in their head and then function smoothly, appropriately at the time that they're supposed to. And that is really what, you know, there's a whole list of different kinds of executive functions. You know, one of them, which is also very relevant in addition to working memory, is just the time blindness of the ADHD people. They don't have an awareness of time. You know, I remember now that Ruhama said to me at the beginning of the podcast there are basically 25 minutes. And so I know, because I have a time awareness now, so I'm able to see we have a few minutes left, right? I get that. But if you have ADHD, you just don't have the ability to feel time. You just don't feel it the same way that the rest of the people do. And we can get angry and we can yell and we can punish as much as we want, but it will not improve the child. I mean, we just see it. I've saw it with thousands of kids. It only when we develop mindful, compassionate approach towards them, and we become, they're a lot harder to parent when they're kids, and they're a lot harder to live with if you happen to have one as a spouse.
So, doctor, like you said, if you have one as a spouse, what suggestion would you give to a spouse about reading the book and implementing if somebody is married to somebody with ADHD? What's the best advice?
The best advice is that if you love the person and you married the person, that you experienced something really positive that is part of who that person is, that you need to now not lose sight of that with all of the details that make living with them difficult. And whenever you begin to work with them, some of the ways which are suggested in the book, to not forget the basis of love and make sure that the spouse always knows that you are there you love them, admire them, and together with that, there are issues that need to be worked out. Then the ADHD person, the defensiveness drops, and you are able to work out many issues. God willing.
Amen. So thank you, doctor. We can go on and on and on. There's so much to talk about with ADHD, but I do recommend that people order the book. It's called Kosher ADHD, Surviving and Thriving in the Torah Observant World with Dr. Simcha Chestner and Dr. Sarah Markowitz. I'd like to thank you so much for making the time and coming on.
And thank you so much for having me. And just keep on doing all that terrific work together with MASK.
Thank you. And I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the Chayalim. Bring the hostages home now. Please consider to go online to maskparents.org and donate so that we can continue with all the MASK programs. Thank you and have a good night.
Don't let your home go up in smoke. A dirty chimney or dryer vent is a fire hazard waiting to happen. Protect your loved ones and your property with Clean My Duct. We offer a full range of professional cleaning services for your ducts and chimneys, keeping your home safe and healthy. Our quality, affordable services are available throughout Rockland County, Monroe, Westchester, the Catskills, upstate New York, and northern New Jersey. Breathe easier knowing your home is free of dust, allergens, and fire risks. Be responsible. Clean your ducts today. Call Clean My Duct at 845-204-3828. That's 845-204-3828. Or visit cleanmyduct.com. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 845-204-3828.
Hi, this is Trudy Stern, and I want to invite you to join me for Nothing But the Truth Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. You will hear Nothing But the Truth from leading elected officials and experts about world events and current issues affecting our community. So join me, Trudy Stern, Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. on Zev Brenner's Talkline Network, WSNR 620 a.m., WNEW 102.7 FM HD3, and online at talklinenetwork.com. Hope you will join me as we delve into nothing but the truth about current events that affect our community most.